us will introduce our speaker, and the second introducer is the person who is really in charge of our health program, Dr. Peyton Weary. But I wanted to say just a word based on the conversation we had before coming down to the auditorium. Anybody know who's the most famous Alzheimer's case in America? Everybody knows. I read a manuscript that will be published by HarperCollins quite soon. And the manuscript was on another subject. It was Reagan's religion and philosophy. But a considerable section of it was about Nell Reagan, his mother. And he had the highest regard for her, more so than almost any member of the family. And therefore, it was particularly troubling to him and something he wanted to understand in depth, that her deterioration, he was absolutely sure, was Alzheimer's. And little by little, his mother lost the capacity to inspire other people. She'd been a lively, creative person in every respect. She had all the symptoms that Ronald Reagan himself, for a considerable part of his adult life, had been sure he was someday going to have. And he traced his own later history in observing his mother. And when she left, he was even more sure that he'd be joining her sometime in all that she had gone through. And I think it's a tribute to the Alzheimer's Association, and in particular to the 30-year experience of our speaker this morning, that more and more our understanding of this dread disease as it advanced, and is also being carried to people who sometimes think if you forget a thing, then you've got Alzheimer's, and it's on the way. And there's so much more, and Reagan learned so much more, and then himself succumbed, as he knew he would, according to this manuscript that'll be published sometime after the first of the year. And with that, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Weary.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ken. Yes, it's a real pleasure for me to be able to introduce Dr. Sheldon Goldberg. He is the president and chief executive officer of the National Alzheimer's Association. He was appointed to that post in December of 2002. I want to read you a little comment that was made by the Orrin Reed, the chair of the Alzheimer's Association National Board of Directors, upon announcing his appointment. Sheldon Goldberg is an exceptionally dynamic, innovative, charismatic, and visionary leader who is passionate about the potential of the Alzheimer's Association. He believes consensus is built when all parties are beneficiaries, and he recognizes that it takes creativity to find as many win-wins as possible. I hope that you all realize that the serious implications of Alzheimer's disease in our society. The increase in Alzheimer's disease is exponential. It's going to present an enormous economic burden for our society, particularly with the baby boomers coming along. And it's a disease that deserves everybody's attention and everybody's support. And I want to emphasize that, because I don't think that we give enough support to realize the importance of supporting research in Alzheimer's disease. And I'm sure that Sheldon will talk about that. The topic of his discussion today is Alzheimer's disease of mass destruction.
Thank you.
I truly appreciate this opportunity to be at the Miller Center. I've read about the Miller Center. I listened and learned And I walk through his hallways and I see the spectacular pictures of the individuals who participated with this illustrious institution. And I am truly honored to be here. So I look forward to this. I'm going to apologize in advance. This was such an important opportunity to express some concerns that I wrote my speech out in detail. And those who know me know that I'm fairly extemporaneous. And when we get to the point of having questions and answers and discussions, you'll see clearly that I'm comfortable on my feet. But there's such an important opportunity that I want to make sure I capture the essence of what I want to talk about. I am honored to be part of the Alzheimer's Association. I celebrated yesterday my anniversary of my first year. And so I'm fairly new to the Alzheimer's Association, but I want to tell you that I'm not new to Alzheimer's. I have spent most of my career, as a matter of fact, all of my career involved in it. And let me just give you a brief thumbnail of where I come from. I am originally from Wisconsin, and my first position was literally working out of the governor's office and with the governor's office on a whole bunch of new categorical funds which were coming into play in the late 60s and the early 70s. And one of those programs was Medicaid. And it is Medicaid which basically funds the nursing homes and so much of the care that goes on in this country. And Medicaid is clearly about providing services to people with Alzheimer's. I then had an opportunity to go to Washington, D.C., in which I spent almost 17 years as the president of an organization called the American Association of Homes and Services for the Aging. It represented almost all of the not-for-profit nursing homes, retirement communities, assisted living, and a broad range of the community service provision around this country. And I have to tell you, overwhelming in those services, the programs we provided in the CCRCs was about providing services to people who had Alzheimer's disease. I then decided to enter the real world after Washington and Madison, Wisconsin. And I was sought after to take over a position as the president and CEO of the largest long-term care hospital in the United States. It is an organization in New York City. It had over 2,000 beds at an operating budget of $300 million and 5,000 employees. And a guy from northern Wisconsin going to New York City, that is a very significant move. But it was about Alzheimer's as well. Overwhelming the people who were in the nursing home and the healthcare and the hospital environment and in the community services there were there because of one primary diagnosis, and that was dementia and Alzheimer's disease. So as I said to you, I'm new to the Alzheimer's Association, but I am not new to the subject of Alzheimer's and to the field of Alzheimer's and to the havoc that it can wreak upon human beings and families and our society. The Alzheimer's Association has a dual purpose. And that dual purpose is, first of all, and how it was founded is about providing care and support and services at the community level. There are over 300 offices across this country that are part of the Alzheimer's Association. We're happy to have Larry Zippin, who is in the room with us here today. And Larry is the executive of the Alzheimer's chapter here in this community. The programs they sponsor range from education to information referral to care counseling to crisis lines to safe return, because Alzheimer's patients tend to wander and oftentimes get lost and get confused. And they tend to educate and support these efforts in their community and to make sure programs are there and well structured to meet the needs of the Alzheimer's patients. But the second area is what I'm going to talk about today, and that is the area of research. And that is the area of doing the basic biological research to find either the treatment, find the procedures that will interrupt this disease, and ultimately, hopefully, to find the cure for this disease. And there is tremendous things going on. The Alzheimer's Association was founded by people from two vantage points. A number of care providers who did not know where to go, who sought each other's out and said there's got to be a difference here, and a very small handful of scientists who recognized this disease, who were seeing it in their medical practice and said we had to do something about it. These people created the organization in 1980, and I am here because of it. It has gone from a very small organization to the combined operating budget of the Alzheimer's Association is in excess of $180 million on an annualized basis. And it is an organization that is other than the federal government of the United States, is the second largest funder of Alzheimer's research in the world. And we're very proud of that. There are many of the leading scientists in Alzheimer's who we hope we gave them some of their start and pointed in the direction that this was a very important area of inquiry. So let me begin. I believe the United States is facing a massive internal threat to our personal, to ourselves, to our financial, to our health security. as individuals, as families, and I believe as a nation. That threat is Alzheimer's disease, and we ignore it at our peril. It is that this most destructive long-term care business is of older people and their families that we face. It is already undermining, I believe, the viability of the Medicare program and is sapping the budgets of every state government in this country. It is eating away at corporate profits and is stealing from us, and even more so from our children, the accumulated knowledge, the wisdom, and the potential contributions of millions of older people who would make and enrich the lives of all of us as people. Alzheimer's disease, I believe, is a biological weapon of mass destruction. We don't have to go searching for it far. We see it every day. It fills our nation's nursing homes. It is filling our assisted living provider and our facilities in this country. We see it in our hospitals and it's hidden in so many of our homes. And the worst of the threat is that it's still invisible. But we know where it is. It is buried deep inside us, in at least half of us who are baby boomers, where there is slowly and inexorably eating away at our brains. And it is the things that will rob us of our knowledge, take away our identity, our sense of self of who we are, our abilities and our basic abilities to care for ourselves. And that prospect in the future should terrify everyone, and it does me. But I believe there is hope. And I believe that there is a chance of preempting this evil and preventing its destruction for millions of American families. And it is not too late if we act now. But we have only a narrow window of time, and we must wage our war on this disease called Alzheimer's now, or relinquish our future and our children's future to the consequences of our inaction. Now, Alzheimer's disease was first discovered in 1906 in Germany by a physician named Dr. Ellis Alzheimer's. And at that time, there was very little attention. It was seen as perhaps an anomaly when he did an autopsy of a patient who he was caring for. And much of it was considered the paradigm of old age, that many people who aged in a natural state, they became confused and they became demented. And one of the most important things we're learning is that Alzheimer's is not normal aging. It is an aberration. It is not the normal processes of aging. Something is going on. And the reason that is becoming so critically important to our society and to our nation is the aging population, and due to the health advances and the increases in longevity that took place in the 20th century, where we saw the lifespan in the 1900 being 47 years, but the lifespan in 2000 being 80 years. And what this has mean is that we're experiencing a geometrical increase in age-related diseases. And literally, there is an epidemic, and I'll stress this, an epidemic of Alzheimer's disease. It is unprecedented in our human history. It is both part of it is the blessing and the curse. With longevity, we also have the curse of Alzheimer's disease. The Alzheimer's Association, created in the year, in 1980, was basically founded by a number of people who knew nowhere to go and needed someone to talk to. And there were very few physicians who were focused on that. If you look at the medical text of 25 years ago and 30 years ago, there's barely even a definition or even a reference to Alzheimer's disease. Our medical students were not talked about it. It was not dealt with. It was something where people were just put away. And it was a sad case, but thought to be very normal aging. Unfortunately, it was not. And really what really awakened this, and I appreciate your comments about President Reagan, because early in 1980, the revolution of awareness started to happen. And that was because of the advocacy and, I think, insight into Alzheimer's disease. It was President Ronald Reagan playing a pivotal role in this revolution, in that in 1983, he signed a proclamation for the first time on a national level recognizing Alzheimer's and creating a thing called National Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month. And so it's very interesting and it's somewhat ironic that President Reagan would recognize it on the national basis, on the world basis, and suffer from the disease himself, so unfortunately. The Alzheimer's Association has a battle plan in its war against Alzheimer's, and I'm here to enlist your support in that effort and into that struggle. We are facing the devastation of Alzheimer's disease for one very simple reason: baby boomers. The 78 million people born between 1945 and 1964 are getting older, and as we age, and as I age, we face new challenges, and the greatest of these, I believe, is Alzheimer's disease. This generation has had a huge force in moving through our society and our economy ever since our fathers came back from World War II. They have been changing everything along the way, where we live, what we buy, how we deliver babies, how do we care for our children. They continue the building of the suburbs, they altered the workplace, they marched against discrimination, and they dealt with equality. But now, they must change their direction and focus on Alzheimer's disease. They have seen the impact on their grandparents. They've seen it today, many of us, and our parents, and our relatives, and have to begin to at least be cognizant that it is going to affect ourselves. Now, wait a minute, you might say. Alzheimer's is an old person's disease. It hits frail, very old people who are about to die anyways. I'll think about it later. I have a lot of other things to worry about first. My kids, my business, my job, the stock market, my retirement. It is your kids, it is your business, it is your job, it is your retirement. Those are the exact reasons why you need to worry about Alzheimer's disease now and why you need to do something about it now. And let me explain. Yes, the incidences of Alzheimer's disease increase dramatically with advancing age. After you reach the age of 65, the risk that you will develop this disease double every 5 years. That means that if you live to be 85, and most of us will, half of us will be struck down with this disease. But don't let those statistics fool you. Alzheimer's is not a disease of the very old. In fact, it starts its destructive work in your brain as much as 20 years before the symptoms appear. So if you are a baby boomer, and you are destined to be the ones who are unlucky of that 50% who will get Alzheimer's in your future, something is going on in your brain now. You just don't know it yet. And if it happens to be you, there's a good chance, if it happens not to be you, there's a good chance that the disease will be attacking your spouse, a partner, or a loved one. And you can't afford to put your thinking off about this, I think, very important subject. If we let Alzheimer's disease capture you, all the planning that you're doing about your retirement, about your family, will be out the window. You will spend all of your savings and your children's inheritance for care. In 1994, a study was conducted which estimated the lifetime cost of care for persons with Alzheimer's disease was $174,000. That was in 1994 dollars. Imagine what the numbers would be for care for people and what it costs today in caring for people in the future. If you end up in a nursing home in the year 2030, where many baby boomers may, you will spend nearly $200,000 a year for a room that you will share with a stranger. If you are trying to stay at your home as long as you can, but it will take an enormous toll on your family as they struggle to meet your needs, your spouse will have a dramatic increase in the chance of risk of a major illness, of depression, a premature death, from the physical and the emotional stress of caregiving. And if your daughter or daughter-in-law becomes your caregiver, and that is who oftentimes provides the family care and support, she will start missing work, may have to cut back to part-time, or may quit altogether. Is that what we want for our families? Is that what we want for your families? Maybe you'll play the odds. Maybe you'll be part of the lucky half that do not get the disease. Sorry, Alzheimer's won't let you off the hook. You will still be affected by the devastation it will wreak upon our economy. With or without Alzheimer's, you will still be a taxpayer. And taxpayers help foot the bill for long-term care, a bill that in which most half of the people who have Alzheimer's disease, their families run out of money, they run out of money, and unfortunately have to turn to Medicaid. Medicaid is the second largest part of every state budget in this country, and it is almost as much as education, and it is the fastest growing. One out of every $5 of your state tax dollars goes to pay for Medicaid. In the year 2000, Medicaid covered $18 billion of costs for nursing home care for people solely with dementia. That spending will increase by 80% within the next 6 years, where it is estimated by sources other than myself that we'll be spending $66 billion, and that is long before the baby boomers are knocking on the nursing home doors. With or without Alzheimer's, we need health insurance when you retire. And you have to start, and you've been paying for Medicare all of your working years to guarantee this basic health security. But Alzheimer's is also putting a huge strain on that program as well. Medicare spends three times, let me say that again, Medicare spends three times more money on beneficiaries who have Alzheimer's disease because they are sicker and they are in hospital more often. In the year 2000, the cost of Medicare was almost $32 billion annually. By 2010, that will increase to almost, and I believe, over $50 billion a year. And that is before the baby boomers ever enroll in the Medicare program. With or without Alzheimer's disease, you'll need your income from your pension and your retirement savings. Well, you know what? Wall Street is not exempt from Alzheimer's. Last year, the disease cost American business an estimated, this is by independent study, and is with the National Chamber of Commerce, $61 billion. That is a figure equal to the total net earnings of the 10 largest Fortune 500 companies. The largest part of that bill in this study said that $36.5 billion, is the cost of absenteeism, lost productivity, the replacement of workers who are trying to juggle care and care for family members because of dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The rest of the share of that is paid for in corporate taxes to pay for health care and long-term care costs for people with dementia. We are accumulating these enormous costs at a time when there are 4.5 million people in the United States with Alzheimer's disease. As it strikes full force on the baby boomers, those numbers will explode. And it is estimated as many as 16 million people by the middle of the century. This cost will be astronomical, and it will simply be unsustainable for you, your family, for government, for business, and I believe for the entire economy.
Is it 16 or
60? 16. 16, four-time increase by the middle of the century. This was done by a study by a scientist who first did it at the University in Massachusetts, and was recently done at the University of Chicago, and we can give you quotes on those numbers. We must wage immediate and total war on Alzheimer's disease now, and we must do it on two fronts. The first one is to prevent the disease from ever disabling you and the millions of others of baby boomers out there and literally stop this disease in its tracks. And the other is to build a healthcare system to treat those who do get the disease more effectively and at significantly less cost. There's no way we can win in this war against Alzheimer's if we let 16 million people get the disease. The way to keep that from happening is to slow down, to stop the silent progress of this disease that is already going in many of us without our even knowing it. And we have to figure out how to do this very soon before the disease has too much of an impact on so many of us. Consider how different the future would be if we made even modest advances, and we are making advances in the science and in medicine. What if we found ways of delaying Alzheimer's disease as much as we have learned to delay congestive heart failure? What would that mean that one out of three individuals who would normally get this or have a sentence or face the sentence of Alzheimer's would never get the disease? What if we could find a way to slow the progression of the disease as we have done so in the way we slowed the progression of Parkinson's disease? That would mean that most who get the disease would be able to manage it and continue to live productive lives in their own communities and is spending the rest of their lives dependent and having others take care of them. Instead of 16 million people, Americans with Alzheimer's, the number would be somewhere more like about 10 million, still a lot of people. But the majority would have a mild disease and would require very modest amounts of care. Alzheimer's would still be a tragedy for those with more severe forms of disease, but we could manage the cost and we could provide a lot more care and support for those individuals. These are realistic goals. And given the current state of Alzheimer's research, the knowledge is exploding at an unprecedented pace. It is almost impossible now to go almost for a week without reading something in the newspaper of new discovery, of new research, of new medical inquiry going on in this area. Scientists now understand, from having almost nothing 20 years ago, scientists now understand what is going on in the brain, what is causing amyloid plaques and tangles and other complex issues. They are rapidly gathering genetic information, especially major studies in the areas of genetics and what role that plays on individuals. There are literally thousands of scientists and researchers who are working to solve this mystery, that they were not there 20 years ago, but they are there studying and inquiring at this point in time. We are now able to diagnose with almost 95% certainty and with accuracy by specialists without having to do autopsies to find out whether the person had Alzheimer's disease or not. We have identified three genes which have been identified as causal or causing this disease in certain individuals. And the National Institute of Aging is running a very broad-based national genetic study of learning more. We now have five drugs that are approved by the FDA, which provide modest help. And I have to tell you, there are many in the pipeline and great clinical trials going on in this country and literally around the world and moving in these types of directions. We are beginning to understand the microbiology that is pointing us in the direction of ways of treating. We are speeding the search to identify the disease in this earliest stages through neuroimaging and other inquiries such as that. We are beginning to identify new targets for prevention and for treatment. And we are even gathering growing evidence that there are some basic things we can do to help in terms of perhaps remediate or lessen the likelihood of Alzheimer's, dealing with blood pressure, dealing with cholesterol, dealing with diabetes. And we are stimulating a pharmaceutical industry around the world, which is focusing this as one of the major new discovery areas in terms of treating people into the future. The only thing that is keeping us from reaching the answers in time is money. We have to invest now to finish the job before the baby boomers start coming down with this disease. And if we don't, then everything that we have done before will only be an academic exercise. We would like to be calling a halt to the space program after we build all the rockets, but before we put a man into orbit. We have made great strides, and we have to continue in that direction. That is why the Alzheimer's Association invests so much of its own resources in research. We have invested $165 million from the Alzheimer's Association, and it is why we are calling on Congress that we invest at least $1 billion in Alzheimer's research to the National Institute of Health. It is a wonderful resource we have in this country at the National Institute of Health and the National Institute of Aging, and we truly believe the clinical trials and studies they will do will pay off handsomely in savings by allowing them to go forward. There's another part of the prevention strategy. You don't have to sit back. You don't have to wait idly. We're hoping that scientists will find the right answer in the right time to save all of us. There is also a growing amount of evidence that suggests there are things you can do right now to lower your risk. You've got to keep your brain active. You've got to do mental exercises. I saw this gentleman who was doing crossword puzzles. You've got to stay socially involved and socially active. Exercise, dance, keep your weight in order, watch your cholesterol, pay attention to your blood pressure, talk to your doctor about antioxidants, which may be of help to you. And of all means, if one is concerned about their health or their memory, seek medical help. It is very, very important that one get this help as early as possible to forestall this. Now, we can't make any promises. I certainly can't make any promises yet. But we do know that all these are good for you. And there's increasing evidence that what is good for your body is also good for your brain. That is why the Alzheimer's Association is calling on the Centers for Disease Control, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and the state health agencies to join us in a national-wide campaign to educate the American people, and especially those baby boomers, on how they can keep their brain healthy. It matters not how successful we are stopping or delay Alzheimer's. There will still be a lot of people who have the disease. We can't afford to keep wasting our healthcare dollars on business-as-usual techniques. Our healthcare system is built around an old view of Alzheimer's and of aging programs, and it is moving in so many wrong directions. And that is why we read in the newspapers so many tragic stories of people with Alzheimer's who are abandoned in emergency rooms because their family caregivers are stretched to the breaking point, of primary care doctors who routinely refer patients to specialists because they don't have the time and enough time to pay attention to them, of Medicare beneficiaries who seek out all the time and visit a multitude of doctors who never talk to each other about the same patient they are all seeing, or the women with Alzheimer's disease who died from a drug her doctor prescribed for her osteoporosis because she was too confused to follow the complicated instructions for taking the medication. All of this drives up the cost of healthcare for patients, for families, for taxpayers, for the state, for the federal government, and for American business. Alzheimer's is not a hopeless, untreatable disease. We know from research and from good practice that it is possible to improve health outcomes and lower cost. But we have to educate practitioners, and we have to change the incentives in the system to make the best practices the standards of care for people with Alzheimer's disease. We now have 5 drugs approved for treatment of Alzheimer's disease by the Food and Drug Administration. While these are not magic bullets, for many people they have helped to delay some of the most disabling symptoms of the disease and the long-term needs that go with them. Yet, it is only now that Medicare is beginning to consider paying for these drugs. Alzheimer's disease can now be diagnosed with a high level of certainty. The earlier the diagnosis, the more likely it is that the current interventions can slow the decline, and they can be effective at slowing that decline. Yet Medicare does not pay primary doctors the amount of time that it takes to assess, diagnose, and manage a person with Alzheimer's disease. 4 out of 5 people with early signs of impairment are not diagnosed or treated by the primary physician. Costs of the common chronic conditions in the people like heart disease and diabetes double in people who have dementia because they get sicker and they end up hospital more often. Yet Medicare will not pay for anyone to manage these coexisting conditions and prevent these acute care episodes. And we could save so much. Home care physicians and creative nursing homes have proven that it is possible to save as much as $2,500 per person per month on the Medicare program by not getting people and not throwing people through emergency rooms, by treating people where they live and where they exist. Yet all the incentives in the systems are to send the patient to the hospital where the bills for Medicare are the highest. When families can get enough paid care at home to keep their loved one out of a nursing home, it costs a fraction, 1/3 of the cost of having a person in a nursing home. And we believe that modest investment in family counseling and supportive services can keep people with dementia out of hospitals and out of emergency rooms and delay nursing home admissions by as much as a year. Even on the average, if we delayed 1 month a nursing home admission of a patient with Alzheimer's, it would save the federal government over $1 billion a year. All of these are change. We need to build our healthcare system and the financings that support them, particularly Medicare and Medicaid, around new concepts of chronic care management, disability prevention, and community support. The results will be better outcomes for people with Alzheimer's disease and their families, and in the long run, less cost to everyone, to families, taxpayers, government, and business. Some of this battle plan will involve some short-term infusion of public and private investment. We believe that this upfront will produce long-term gains as we fight this and try to conquer Alzheimer's disease and prevent it from being literally a weapon of mass destruction for much of our economy and our society. Let me say in conclusion, for me, there's nothing theoretical about the war on Alzheimer's disease. It is a personal fight. I am terrified of the thought of losing one's mind, of not remember my children's name. I do not want my daughter-in-laws to have to take care of me. I spend most of my professional career working in the long-term care industry. I have enormous respect and admiration for the administrators, for the nurses, for the director of staff who work so hard in providing quality care. But I will tell you, I do not want to spend the last years of my life in a nursing home. I would do everything in my power to keep that from happening to my family and to your family, to anyone in America. That is why I joined the Alzheimer's Association, why I'm here to enlist you in this important battle. Join our advocacy effort with Congress, with your state legislatures, with other healthcare providers. Volunteer for the Alzheimer's chapter to help and support people. Make your financial contributions so that research and services can continue. And above all, keep your brain healthy. You know, President George W. Bush issued a challenge in his State of the Union message less than a year ago. And he said, "We will not deny, we will not ignore, we will not pass along our problems to other Congresses, to other presidents, to other generations. Alzheimer's is our problem, and we will solve it." I am honored to attend the Miller Center. I appreciate the very opportunity and your willingness to listen to my concerns. And I welcome your comments and look forward to an active question and answer and discussion session. Thank you.
Someone has said we ought to be able to get 20 questions in the half hour that remains, a little less than that. But who'd try to prove that we can get that kind of question? Dr. Weary?
Yeah, I have one question. Sheldon, what is the incidence of Alzheimer's in other countries? Is it growing as rapidly as we see it here? And what do we have to learn? How are they dealing with it in some of these other countries? And do we have lessons to learn from them as to how to manage this disease?
I can speak towards various countries. If I look towards Northern Europe, which has, in some regards, a longer life and longer longevity than ours, they are struggling. They have different types of structures of healthcare delivery. And sometimes they're literally advanced in terms of how they have more social supports for individuals in some of those countries. One of the interesting things is that we're looking from an epidemiological standpoint. We're finding that there is increased incidence of Alzheimer's in certain populations, in the Afro-American population, in the Hispanic population. We don't know whether that's a function of diabetes, diet, or a host of other issues, but we are seeing some higher incidences in some of those populations from an epidemiological standpoint. The United States is only beginning to come to grips with this. And I believe very strongly that unless we come to grips with it and really find the cure or the treatment or whatever will interrupt this disease, it literally will wreck our healthcare delivery system simply because the number of people and the cost it will impact upon us. So that's the best of my knowledge about what's going on. We are doing some inquiry. We do fund research in other countries to begin looking at that so we can learn from some of their experiences.
I have had the job of taking care of an awful lot of people who have Alzheimer's, working as a nurse in a nursing home, in the home. I know you approach this talk from a different perspective, but are you doing anything about how people who have been identified as having Alzheimer's are treated? The training for the persons in the nursing home, in the home, because there are some techniques that have been offered, but they're not funded. And so we have the normal person in the nursing home with the CNAs who have been used to taking care of bodies, not minds. The one thing that I have heard about the Montessori class system of dealing with educating and handling people who have the Alzheimer's. I don't know whether you are looking into teaching people, but that's a very important. You can get all the medicines you want, but unless the caregiver is given information on how to handle some of the things that would never work, like you have said.
We funded a study through Research Triangle in North Carolina, and I think it was Dr. Sloan who conducted the study. And we published it last week, and it was published in conjunction with the American Gerontological Society's meeting in California. And we were very concerned about it, because what it said to us is that we're finding that in nursing homes and assisted living, and this was an independent research study, that there are unacceptable high incidence of dehydration and literally misdiagnosis and lack of proper medication. And it's sad because I've represented this industry and I've been a part of that industry. Now, we don't believe it's necessary. The issue is more regulation. There is so much regulation and reasons to do it right. We believe it's a function of more dollars. We believe it's a function of proper training. We believe, but I personally believe it's more important than that, and this is my experience. I think there needs to be a cultural change in how we approach caring for people, how we organize and structure the healthcare delivery system, how people operate and function. We become very compartmentalized when we create everyone as a specialist, and that's not my job, that's someone else's job. But when it comes to caring for a person with Alzheimer's or a person in the nursing home, it's everybody's job. And so some of the real creative things going on are sort of a really cultural change in how the organizations are functions, how they're structured, how people behave, and how they operate. But all depends on training. You know, to say that it's just a function of lack of money is a cop-out. Even if there are lacks of funds, we still can do a better job of caring, of hydrating, of providing proper nutrition, of diagnosing and caring for people. And the Alzheimer's Association has a role and responsibility there. It is one which we are not advocating for more regulation. There's plenty of regulations. It is that we enforce what we have and that we train people to do it properly in those care environments.
Thank you.
The nice thing about the written questions is that they do come easily within the time limit that we set ourselves for 20 questions. Could you discuss the value of Aricept, memantine, and other medications?
Okay, Aricept is one of the five drugs we talked about, and the other is memantine. Memenda is what it is called. It is a product. Aricept is by a company called Eisai, which is a Japanese company, and is marketed by Pfizer. And it has had tremendous impact on a number of people, especially in the earlier stages. Memantine is a drug which was approved within the month and is not available yet, but will be available at the beginning of the year. And I think it will go by the name of Memenda, and hopefully by the first of the year. This is the first drug approved for treating individuals with moderate to severe cases of Alzheimer's disease. And we're very excited. It is being marketed by a company called Force Laboratories in this country, and it has just been approved by the FDA for use and is now just in the process of getting out to the pharmacy so it can be distributed to individuals. What this represents is, you know, if we had this conversation 10 years ago, there were no drugs. There was really nothing that one could provide. And I have to say, these are not magic bullets. These are moderate or modest assistance to individuals. It helps to forestall or delay some of the more difficult problems individuals experience. But it is this kind of drug inquiry that is going on, that there is tremendous science. We are looking at the basic science of neurology and of the organization of the brain. And there are many, many clinical trials. There was a very exciting, and I don't mean to digress into this, of immunology approach to this to Alzheimer's treatment. And there was actually studies on rats where they actually injected them and actually this amyloid disappeared. They did this in a company called Elan, and I'm not trying to give anyone a commercial. The problem is that some of the individuals who had this developed a brain inflammation, so the study was stopped. What is so exciting is that some of these individuals who happened to pass away from other issues not related to their Alzheimer's, when they did autopsies on these individuals, they found that the amyloid plaque had also disappeared. And so there is a whole series of companies looking at immunology in other ways. And I say that only because I'm not a physician and I'm not an expert in this, and there are others in this room who know much more than I. But there is tremendous inquiry going on. And what I am proud of the Alzheimer's Association, much of that has been stimulated by the Alzheimer's Association. And much of it is supported, and I mean this in the most positive way, by the National Institute of Aging, the National Institute of Health, have really stimulated this kind of research, and it's very promising.
Any brief question?
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming today. You're talking about a lot of money, and I wonder what your thoughts are on triaging the allocations of federal funds in this area.
You ask a tough question. You mean I have to deal with reality? I believe that, you know, there's so many things that go on in the federal government that make no sense. And when you use the word triage, I think we need to put our resources where they're most important and have the best yield and the best impact. I happen to personally believe that Alzheimer's, for a few million dollars of research to get some clinical trials going, the promise is so positive that we can find solutions in the next 5, 10, or 15 years that it is worthy of doing now. And that's my personal belief. We are spending tens and tens of billions of dollars on this disease. Currently at the National Institute, we spend $640 million. That is the appropriations out there, plus or minus a few dollars, a few million. Our hope is to get that to a billion. We believe that billion is justified because of on a conservative basis, if we can stop this disease, if we can interrupt this disease, we believe there is an unbelievable payoff on that investment. And what supports us is that the amount of inquiry, the amount we have learned in the last 10 and 15 years is phenomenal. And if we can learn that much more in the next 10 years, we really believe we can interrupt and stop this. My dream is to turn the lights out on the Alzheimer's Association. I would love to be without a job. I would love to turn the lights out, go home, have a home in Florida, I'd be very happy, but not fear that I was going to get this disease.
There's a question here, having you have identified three genes that cause Alzheimer's. If these genes are found early enough, can treatment begin even before symptoms appear?
Okay. If I was a geneticist, I could probably answer that question. I'm not. And I don't know enough about genetics to really be informed. Others may have better information than I have. I can only identify that three have been identified. And there is a national clinical study of families who have multiple generations with this disease. The Alzheimer's Association is very active in recruiting subjects for this national study.
Then a similar question. I have read there are three stages in the progression of Alzheimer's. Can you describe the symptoms and effects of these stages and how long each generally lasts? Okay.
The average, and these are only averages because they vary, it can be, the average from diagnosis to usually the death of the individual is almost 8 years. So this is a chronic condition that people live with a long time. There have been people who have lasted 20 years with this disease and lasted a long time. It's generally classified as early, moderate, and then severe. You know, obviously, at the early stages, it's dealt with forgetfulness, confusion, disorientation. But generally, many of the basic functions, people can eat, they can do some basic navigation, they can communicate, but they become disorganized and disoriented. As the disease progresses, they become increasingly more confused. They may need more assistance with some basic biological function, with nutrition, with bathroom skills and other types of areas, to the point where it's very, very severe, where literally a person is totally and completely incapacitated. The individual oftentimes in that role will be in a nursing home, certainly assisted living, will become very confused, may not remember much about them, their loved ones, their children, will not recognize them. Now that's a very lay approach to describing the sort of the symptomatology and the progression of the disease. Our hope is, and our dream is that we will find ways of identifying those who are prone to this disease earlier, of having interactions with them and having compounds will stop the deterioration before there's any symptoms. That's the cure. And that those who do develop the symptoms, that there will be drugs and other chemicals and other compounds and a series of treatments that will moderate them or mitigate those diseases or that deterioration to the point that it's not a problem. And those are really what our dreams are about, and I hope that answers the question. I know there are many others in this room who are much more knowledgeable than I am about the symptomatology, and I will accept help in any way possible.
next question. Yes, way in the back. And then in the next to the back.
Of the contributions which the Alzheimer's Association receives, what percentage is spent on research and what percentages are spent on solicitation and administration?
We are approved by the Better Business Bureau, and I'll be close to the numbers. Approximately 23% of the funds we receive go into administration, pay for my salary, go for things such as solicitation, those other areas. Approximately 76% go into service, education, communication, and funding research. This year we hope to fund approximately $20 million of research. And those are published numbers, we've been approved by the Better Business Bureau and a number of other organizations. The truth of the matter is we would like to even get that much smaller than that. There's a lot of new things we can do to become much more efficient, and we are going to do those new things to become more efficient about how we solicit and how do we get as much bang for our money, and that is to get at the care and services. And our board is extraordinarily mindful of it, and I am very mindful of it. We need to do a much better job. I think we're doing an okay job. We need to do a much better job.
Next question, Colonel.
I'll stand up so people can hear me. I hope these are good questions. You mentioned that Alzheimer's population is liable to go from 6 to 16 million. But the population of the United States was going to be doubled by 2050. You have 500 million people, many of whom are going to be immigrants, you know, low-income immigrants. Mm-hmm. You have a, that's one question. The next one is, what are the incentives for the drug industry to develop Alzheimer's drugs? I mean, we've all gotten tired of paying these enormous prices for drugs. Is something going in this area? Mm-hmm. And the third is there a test for Alzheimer's? I asked a doctor, neurologist one time, if there was a vulnerability test or an early test. He assured me it was all garbage, that it was just for the benefit of the tester.
Okay. That was not one question. There was three or four there. Let me see if I can. Well, I'd like to try to address all three of them. The numbers that I use, the numbers were used, were done by a researcher who was first at the University of Boston and is now at the University of Chicago. They were published about, I want to say, 3 months ago. And what they did, the study was replicated both cases. And that is where they came up with currently at 4.5. Originally, we thought it was 4.4 million people in the United States. The high number is 16 million at the middle of this coming century. Those are us baby boomers popping through the system. They are the people who are here already. And that is a high number. It could be as much as 16.5 million people. The point I make to stress that is almost four times the amount of destruction that is going on in our society right now, four times. And the issues I raise that is because looking at inflation and our ability to sustain and afford that type of thing, I happen to agree that our population will be growing, there's no question about it, but that still is a tremendous number of people. And I'm not so sure we fully address the issue as our population grows, because those people will also suffer from this disease. The second issue you raised is about incentives for the pharmaceutical industry. I've always heard that there are two or three major incentives to the pharmaceutical industry because of pure business. One is the diet drug that will make me skinny, and that's a long time in coming, but maybe it's coming. But the other one is this neurological approach to this. If we are talking about 16 million people in the United States, we are talking about tens of millions of people throughout the world who will be suffering from Alzheimer's disease. The pharmaceutical industry, this is one of their highest priorities. Almost every pharmaceutical industry in the world, is beginning. Aricept is a classic example. That is a drug that was developed in Japan. It was not developed in the United States. Mamenda, which has just been approved, it comes out of Europe and has been actually used in Europe for the last several of years. It has only now been approved in the United States. My point is there is a massive incentive to the pharmaceutical industry to do inquiry in the areas of Alzheimer's, and anything that will enhance the intellectual, the capacity of the mind. The last question, I'm really pleased that you raised it, and that is there a simple test? No. There are a lot of charlatans out there. You can see them in the drugstores where they're scratch and sniff. If you can't smell it, you have Alzheimer's disease. There's a lot of charlatans out there, and there's a lot of people who want to make money. The way of getting a diagnosis is going to your doctor. It is a complex process by which your doctor will judge your skills, your communication skills, your memory, and a number of other tests. We'll probably run a series of blood tests and other types of inquiry to make what I'll say is a differential diagnosis. But it is not as easy as sniffing something or taking a very simple test. And I will say that there are a lot of charlatans and a number of crooks out there pushing various types of things that, you know, may have some minor relationship to this thing, but they extend it way beyond what the validity is. And so the real true answer to this thing, if one suspects they have a problem, see your physician. Go to your doctor. Increasingly, doctors are somewhat new to this, but certainly neurologists and a lot of psychiatrists and a lot of family doctors are becoming very, very wise and make this diagnosis, and make this diagnosis with pretty good accuracy. We're talking about 95%. There are other tests that are out there too that we could talk about, PET scans and some radiological tests that are very experimental that can also be done for very difficult differential diagnoses. I sound like a physician, I'm not. But I am reading and looking at as much as I can, and I talk to a lot of physicians.
Yes, you had a question.
I was just wondering, when I try to talk to my 45-year-old daughter with a 17-year-old child and a 1-year-old child, isn't she somewhat comforted by the fact that there's so much hype about the research successes so far that she thinks that by the time she might actually have Alzheimer's instead of just developing it now, that'll be gone by then. I mean, aren't there a lot of people that look at it that way every time there's all this hype about this little piece of research, success, et cetera?
I hope so. I hope that your granddaughter doesn't have to worry about this disease, that there are treatments there, but there aren't now. And I'm an optimist. I believe that we are closing in. I truly believe that. And I talk to neurologists and psychiatrists and neurobiologists, and there's a sense of optimism when I talk to them. No one's going to say it's going to happen on such and such a day in 8 years, but there's a sense that we have learned and inquired and studied so much, and we are making great gains. And it's not going to come by one magic pill. It's going to come step by step by step by step. And my hope is that your granddaughter and your daughter and you and I, hopefully in our future, don't have to worry about this disease, but that's not the case right now. It is a devastating disease, and if we don't do the basic research, and if we don't create the proper incentives for the healthcare system and find the drugs or compounds, we're going to be in a very serious shape. I question coming here and using this as a biological weapons of mass destruction. But unchecked and uncured, I believe it'll cripple the healthcare system of this country completely. I truly believe that.
You have questions.
So what percentage of people who are possible Alzheimer's candidates are aware that they might possibly have Alzheimer's? And how is that detectable?
I don't know whether, it's very interesting in our first comments that there were some premonition. I would think that people who have family histories, especially multiple people in the family, would be very a heightened sensitivity. And I've talked to many people who have had a grandfather and a grandparent who have the disease, and certainly there are some genetic. It is not a perfect, maybe that's about 10%. I don't really know whether there is a premonition or whether there is someone knows something before. My skill, my interest is of finding that cure or finding that treatment or whatever interrupts the disease so we don't have to deal with this. But there others probably could answer that question better than I. It's a tough question.
You had a question.
How strong is the connection between Alzheimer's and long-term use of estrogen in women?
you've been reading. This is one of the areas of clinical inquiry. There was a major women's health study in this country that we talked about estrogen use would help improve cardio functioning, and second of all, it would also improve lessen the likelihood of individuals developing Alzheimer's disease. And it became such everyone just knew that. And everyone was taking Premarin or whatever the drug was of estrogen. And more recently, in the last 3 or 4 months, the research came out that it was just the opposite. That in many people that the use of estrogen actually increased the likelihood of developing Alzheimer's disease. This is the reason for the strictness and the discipline of clinical inquiry. We have, in our history of science, we've made many other mistakes in our history. We used to put worms on people to bleed them. Remember that in the dark ages, and it is so important that we do pay attention to epidemiological studies and other studies. And that's one of my concerns when people start advertising they have the cure. I want to make sure that it's done under rigorous clinical trial that is really truly helping people. And I think you identified one very good case where the recommendations. Actually, the truth was just the opposite of what we thought it was.
You always have such good questions. Next to the last row, on the inside. Do you have a question? No, you don't turn around.
You're on the spot.
I've done a lot of Alzheimer's research. And last year, as a member of AAAS, we've done a study on new technologies to help the handicapped and elderly. We did it for the House Committee on Science. It was purely a voluntary effort. That resulted in a bill going through the House. We had a lot of help from the ARP and the Committee on Aging. Alzheimer's disease was not present. I was disappointed. The bill died in the Senate committee last winter, but I'm told it might come back into being. It would be a useful thing to to get some Alzheimer's Association involvement just to help push that bill. It would have established a line item in the National Science Foundation for this type of research. And so it would have been another source of funding for a different type of research. But it's, I was disappointed because I've been a member of the association for, 20 years, almost 15 years.
I would add to you that I'm disappointed with ourselves as well. I think that's the type of inquiry that helps people live better, whether it's Alzheimer's, with other disabling conditions. We are funding an initiative, and we're doing this in partnership with Intel. And Intel is helping to provide the money, but there are a number of other technology companies. And the inquiry is how do we find uses of technology, and we're doing this on our own, that can help people live independently, function better in the community, and how do we apply technologies? But there are a lot of simple technologies, and let me give one example. I had the opportunity of going with basically my mother-in-law on vacation a couple weeks ago, and who has signed, as a matter of fact, has been diagnosed with this issue. And I watched her struggle with taking medication. She's 87 years old and has a multitude of medications, as many do at that age, and would get terribly confused about what to take, when, how to take it, did I take it, can't remember whether I took it, what do I take it with. Now, let me use simple technology. There are technology that dispense the pills during the course of the day and have beepers and buzzers and reminders to take these things. There are stuff that we should be doing. I will tell you that I will inquire into why we were not more supportive. I will tell you that I'm very active with the AARP. I think they're a great organization. I happen to chair one of their boards of directors. And so I'm very involved in the organization. But I will make sure that the Alzheimer's Association is equally involved in that effort. I appreciate you bringing it up.
Well, we thank all of you for coming. We've come to our adjournment time. I don't want to take advantage of the opportunity, but as you know, the Miller Center also has a great challenge, and we certainly will appreciate your annual giving before the end of the year. So thank you very much for coming. A brilliant presentation.